Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Narches podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Against Our Better Judgment by Alison Weir is a political and historical investigation into the American path toward supporting the creation of Israel. The book focuses on the period from the early Zionist movement through the end of World War II and the Truman administration, arguing that U.S. policy was shaped less by clear national interest debate and more by advocacy campaigns, messaging strategies, selective information flows, and domestic political pressures. Weir presents a narrative that examines how public opinion was influenced, how key officials were persuaded or sidelined, and how media framing and lobbying affected congressional and executive decisions. Rather than treating U.S. involvement as inevitable, the book emphasizes contingency, highlighting turning points where different choices were possible. Written for readers interested in foreign policy history, it aims to connect past decisions to long-running consequences in the Middle East and within American politics. The result is a polemical but detailed account that invites readers to re-examine familiar events through the lens of power, persuasion, and policymaking. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, reframing the origins from Zionist strategy to U.S. political reality. A central topic is how the book interprets the early Zionist project as not only a movement seeking a homeland, but also an organized effort to secure great power sponsorship, eventually extending to American backing. Weir traces how activists and organizations worked to make the cause legible and compelling to U.S. audiences and decision makers, particularly as America's global role expanded. The narrative emphasizes that U.S.I. support did not emerge in a vacuum. It interacted with immigration debates, isolationism, anti-Semitism, and shifting international alignments. The book highlights the importance of messaging in translating a distant geopolitical plan into a domestic political priority, including the creation of sympathetic narratives and the cultivation of influential allies. It also stresses that American institutions had multiple entry points for influence, from community groups and newspapers to congressional offices and the White House. By focusing on this interaction between transnational advocacy and U.S. political incentives, the book frames the origins of support as a process of persuasion and pressure rather than a straightforward humanitarian response. This approach encourages readers to evaluate how political projects gain legitimacy through coalition building, strategic communication, and timing. Secondly, information, media, and public opinion as policy instruments. Another major theme is the relationship between information environments and policy outcomes. The book argues that American public understanding of Palestine and the emerging Arab-Jewish conflict was shaped by what was emphasized, what was omitted, and how stories were framed. Weir discusses the role of media coverage, public relations efforts, and advocacy networks in defining the moral vocabulary that surrounded the issue, often simplifying complex local realities into more emotionally resonant narratives. In this telling, persuasion is not only about arguments, but also about agenda setting, deciding which events get attention, which voices are treated as authoritative, and which facts are treated as decisive. The book also considers how policymakers respond to perceived public opinion, especially in moments when elections and party coalitions are at stake. A key implication is that the public sphere can function as a lever on foreign policy, even when the underlying issues are distant and technical. Readers are prompted to think about the mechanics of influence, how letters, petitions, editorials, speeches, and prominent endorsers can create a sense of consensus or urgency. This topic connects historical case studies to a broader lesson about how modern democracies translate mediated information into geopolitical commitments. Thirdly, White House decision-making and the Truman-era turning point. The book places considerable weight on executive branch dynamics, particularly during the Truman administration, when recognition and early support for the new state became decisive. Weir portrays the period as a contest among advisors, agencies, and interest groups, with the president navigating competing recommendations and political constraints. The narrative emphasizes internal disagreement, suggesting that some officials prioritized strategic concerns such as regional stability, relations with Arab states, and access to resources, while others focused on domestic political consequences and humanitarian framing after the Holocaust. The book treats this as a turning point where institutional processes, personal relationships, and political calculations converged. It also explores how lobbying and advocacy sought direct access to the presidency, and how that access could amplify certain perspectives over others. This topic highlights the idea that foreign policy is often made under time pressure and amid incomplete information, making it vulnerable to organized influence and simplified moral narratives. Readers are invited to examine the role of electoral politics, fundraising networks, and partisan competition in shaping what might otherwise be treated as a purely diplomatic decision. The result is a case study in how presidential leadership can be channeled by competing power centers inside and outside government. Fourthly, Congress, lobbying, and the architecture of political pressure. A further focus is how legislative politics and organized advocacy can create durable pressure on foreign policy. Weir describes an ecosystem in which congressional resolutions, hearings, constituent campaigns, and behind-the-scenes persuasion combine to set boundaries on what executives can do. In this framework, lobbying is not presented as a single event, but as a system that rewards attention, repetition, and political incentives. The book argues that lawmakers often respond to concentrated, motivated constituencies and to narratives that can be communicated quickly to voters, particularly in districts where electoral margins are thin. It also points to the way coalitions can cross party lines when the issue is framed as both moral and politically advantageous. This topic underscores how policy outcomes can be shaped by sustained organization-building institutions, cultivating relationships, and maintaining message discipline over years. Readers can take from this section an understanding of how foreign policy becomes domestic politics, with complex international questions reduced to signals of loyalty, identity, or values. The broader lesson is that democratic processes are not automatically neutral. They are shaped by who organizes, who participates, and who has the resources to keep an issue in front of decision makers. Lastly, long-term consequences, U.S. interests, Middle East stability, and narrative lock-in. The book connects early decisions to later consequences, arguing that initial commitments created a self-reinforcing policy trajectory. Weir suggests that once the United States embraced a particular stance, it became harder to revise because institutions, alliances, and public narratives adapted around that stance. This topic examines the concept of narrative lock-in. When a policy is tied to moral certainty and political identity, alternative approaches can be dismissed as illegitimate, even if strategic conditions change. The book also considers how early diplomatic choices affected perceptions of the United States in the region, influencing trust, resentment, and the credibility of American mediation. In this view, the origin story matters because it shapes how later events are interpreted, which actors are seen as victims or aggressors, and what solutions seem acceptable. Readers are encouraged to think in terms of path dependence. Early choices can narrow the menu of future options and increase the cost of policy change. Whether or not one agrees with the author's judgments, this section offers a framework for analyzing how foreign policy commitments persist across administrations, supported by alliances, bureaucratic habits, and public messaging that makes deviation politically risky. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want a critical, advocacy-focused account of how U.S. dealt foreign policy aligned with the creation of Israel, including students of modern Middle East history, political communication, and American governance. It can benefit a reader's life by sharpening their ability to spot how messaging, institutional access, and domestic incentives shape international outcomes. The themes encourage a more careful approach to news consumption and a more realistic understanding of how policy is made, not only by ideals, but also by organized interests, narratives, and political timing. For readers who feel that standard histories emphasize diplomacy while underplaying persuasion and domestic pressure, this book offers a counterbalance and a clear thesis to evaluate. Compared with many similar works, its appeal lies in its sustained focus on influence mechanisms and political process, rather than treating U.S. support as a simple moral inevitability. Even readers who disagree with its framing may find it worth buying because it compels verification, comparison with other scholarship, and deeper engagement with primary debates about lobbying, media, and executive decision-making. As a result, it functions both as a narrative history and as a prompt to think critically about policy formation. If you would like to support Allison Weir, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.